Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Welcome back, everybody. Please welcome Warwick Lucas, Private Clients Portfolio Manager at Funani, and Raymond Parsons from the NWU Business School. I suppose the main topic of agenda today is going to be interest rates, both in the US and here at home. Now, in the US, there was obviously probably a little bit sharper cut than some of us had expected at around 50 basis points. But we were going to be setting ourselves up for disappointment if we expected the Reserve Bank to do the same. So, Raymond, what do you see as the big picture coming out of this cut out of America?
Well, I think it was a bit of a surprise. I think the two driving factors were, firstly, of course, every central banker has to unpack the actual domestic conditions which drive their decisions, the data. And of course, for the United States, it also has a global implication. But secondly, very interesting also the mandate. If you listen very carefully to what Powell said, and it's language that our governor and our central bank don't use, he kept saying, "I have a dual mandate and I wish to protect the labor market." You'll never hear those words here. So he said, that's why I'm now feeling we're in a strong enough position to be able to go by the half percentage point. So I think quite clearly there probably is a bit of an ambivalent reaction in the financial markets there in particular to this decision, because I think it was a bit of a surprise. And so that leaves it open for more than one interpretation. But perhaps Warwick could add that aspect to us.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, the Fed, of course, has indicated at Jackson Hole that they would pivot to a loosening bias. So they telegraphed loosening and basically teed it up. That's obviously on the way there. Then there was always going to be the question of 25 versus 50 basis points. And I think the concern was that, of course, it's election time and one has to be careful about interpretations of political alignment. Because, of course, a deep cut can always signal a deeper problem as opposed to a necessary adjustment. There was a particularly necessary adjustment because of the particularly large restatement of just how well the jobs numbers had been counted in the first place. And then, of course, there's another sleeper that not everyone might have considered. But, of course, with the growth that's actually occurred in terms of house prices in the US, there's a potential sleeper there in terms of how much people might be able to go out and borrow in the face of rate cuts. And I must say, expecting for the Fed to sort of do their 25 bips and then wait and see. But no, clearly they decided the full 50 was the way to go. Yes, I would be so glad if our governor had decided to follow. But anyway,
I think
I might just add, if I may, that if we stand back, of course, this past week, we've seen the ECB cut rates. We've had the Fed, of course, cut rates. We had, of course, the Bank of England this morning decided to stand pat. And now we've got the Saab cutting. So if you look at the big picture, the world is, by and large, with some exceptions, into a rate cutting cycle now. We're into that era. And it's now a question of judgment, both from a global and a domestic point of view, how far each central bank will go. Because obviously, we can see that from a global point of view, inflation has declined, and that puts several central banks in a position to now do something about it and to use the new space. But I think coming to South Africa, I think the issue is, once again, one could argue that although the MPC statement kept wringing its hands about the risks in the global outlook, other central banks, if you look at their statements, are quite comfortable in cutting, looking at their domestic circumstances, and are not paranoic about what's happening in the world, although they recognize that the geopolitical situation is not ideal and there are a lot of uncertainties, but they have to get on with what they have to do domestically. And well, if there's a big shock again globally, you'll have to deal with it when it arises. And I think, so in that sense, I would have liked us to go a little further, but I think I can understand that coming back to the mandate, the language that Powell uses is very different to the language that our MPC uses.
I think the MPC probably has a dual mandate, but their other mandate is probably protection of the rand more than protection of the labor market, Raymond.
No, but well, that's what I'm saying. That's not in their mandate.
No.
And I don't expect, but that explains why one central bank might feel it has to go 50 basis points given its mandate. And that you must understand that the Fed is one of the few that has a dual mandate. And therefore, you can see the balance in his narrative is completely different. And I can understand that. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just trying to explain why our MPC might have felt they had less room to maneuver because they have a narrower mandate. And of course, I mean, you could argue that the conditions in a large economy like the United States are also different. These are all differences. But I think it's wrong to say simply because the United States has gone 50 basis points, so we should. But I think if we look at our domestic circumstances and where we've come from, I would have liked to have seen a little more flexibility. And I think from that point of view, that the 25 basis points was expected and was in line with the sort of prudent attitude that our MPC likes to take.
And Raymond, I suppose one of the things about cutting interest rates is one of its obviously direct consequences is it puts more money in the pocket of the average consumer. And it is that consumer consumption that drives GDP at the end of the day.
Well, I think it's going to put very little into the pockets. I mean, you know, must accept that our monetary policy is still in restrictive territory. I think it's obviously welcome that we now are in fact pivoting towards, you know, cheaper money, but it's going to be a slow process. And if we want to get growth going, we're going to have to do a lot of other things on the structural front. But one must also remember that in the statement today, I was pleased to see some recognition that if you want to get growth going, we've got to get our private fixed capital investment up. And of course, public investment, but I'm now thinking more of the private sector, because as the governor himself said, those numbers are not looking very good at the moment, and you need them if you want to get more than 1% and 2% growth. But I would also make the point that the cost of borrowing is also relevant to an investment decision, especially smaller business. So eventually, at some point, you've got to say, well, apart from the structural issues that need to improve investment and build investor confidence, if you can progressively bring down the cost of capital, that will also help to underpin the sort of investment that you want to encourage, because the risk-reward ratio will be improved.
Warwick, have you seen any reaction that is out of the ordinary on either the JSE or in the American markets to this rate cut?
Look, I think the reaction we had yesterday from the US was quite uncertain, a little bit timorous. I think what I can say is just looking through the line items that had previously been weak in the likes of the GDP now rolling now costs was, well, in the previous month the likes of retail trade, industrial production and housing starts had all been pretty sodden, and those that came out in the last couple of days in the States were actually much firmer. So from that point of view, I'm scratching my head a little bit at where the sort of discomfort on data is. I think maybe it's knee-jerk. I mean, turning to our own year-on-year inflation, I mean, the last 2 months we've seen our core inflation has come down from 4.5 to 4.1. The actual inflation obviously is a different story, but nevertheless, I mean, we've seen some sharp drops in the last few months, which means that in real terms, our interest rate has actually continued to plot new highs. I mean, from that point of view, I mean, 25 basis points is still a bit stiff, especially when you consider that the fuel price over recovery is an order of 120 cents. I mean, we actually are supposed to get a fairly decent cut in fuel prices soon, all things being equal.
I think that the governor did down again put a marker and a red flag out, because it is a disturbing factor, and that is the role of the administered prices distorting the inflation outlook and keeping the central bank a little more nervous, such as the Eskom tariffs of 30 and 40%, which are in the pipeline. Fortunately, I think that is going to be challenged. But nonetheless, as a central bank, you have to take that into account on your radar.
And let's face it, Raymond, most of our inflation that is really sticky is imported inflation. It's not demand-driven inflation.
Well, you see, that's why I'm not too worried about the two-pot system. I think it will be a very sort of Goldilocks thing, not too hot, not too cold, because we have a fairly flat economy. There's no demand inflation. And in fact, with a strengthening rand on the one hand and with the pass-through on the other being very diluted, I think we're still in a good place not to worry too much about imported inflation at this stage, unless some other big shock, some other big geopolitical shock should emerge as a result of the existing tensions in the world at the moment.
I suppose the big winners from the two-pot system and the withdrawals from the two-pot system have to be SARS, probably to the tune of about 5 billion rand, and a little boost to the economy, but it's going to be fleeting.
Yes, well, I think Warwick has a view on that too, and I think I've all agreed we don't really know enough other than to say, well, we think it will graft itself onto the system over time without too much of a disturbance, because actually the rules of engagement are really quite firm and don't really allow for any exaggerated impact. But perhaps Warwick might want to add a comment.
Yeah, I mean, it's in terms of withdrawing from your pension pot, I mean, it is sort of often quite restrictive, because there's a fair bit of admin that's been trotted out for that to actually happen. I think in terms of motivations, I think most of it would be debt reduction rather than consumption. Obviously, then it might be interesting to survey, and this, of course, is more of an FSCA thing than anything else, to actually see, well, what kind of guidance did people get in terms of how to manage their pension pots. I think in some places it's been quite variable, sometimes good and responsible, sometimes non-existent.
You know, because I'm sort of working in that environment, Warwick, I think you're absolutely right there. The lack of financial advice that has been given to a lot of these employees is a case in point. But following on social media, I think the different ways that the different generations are actually spending this money is really quite telling. You know, obviously, there are not a lot of boomers. You know, the last of the boomers turned 60 this year, so they're over the age of 55, and so most of their stuff is vested, so they might, you know, sort of dip into that 30,000. But you know, for the Gen Zs, you know, the kids in their 20s and 30s, I mean, I call them kids. I mean, it's a bit cheeky for me to call them kids, because it certainly aren't. But, you know, for employees in their 20s and 30s, where retirement is 30 years hence, you can't blame them for not, you know, thinking that far in advance.
I guess it all boils down to how they coach. And that's really where the financial plan, I would have thought, is supposed to add value rather than an investment advice. But, you know, coaching people to do the right things at the right time.
Yeah, but unfortunately, at that sort of employee level, you know, that sort of financial advice is, you know, hard to come by. You know, there are not a lot of advisors working at that sort of level in employee benefits, as it's called. Anyway. Thank you very much, both of you, for all of your input today. It's been great talking to you. That was Warwick Lucas, Private Client Portfolio Manager at Vonani, and Raymond Parsons from the NWU Business School, chatting to us mostly about interest rates today.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.